You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 27th of April, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, first off, I will just offer a bit of an explanation. For yesterday, you may have had some problems with the website. You may not have been able to access any of the images or the podcasts. We had a server problem, and it took roughly 24 hours to replace the server. And it is all fixed up now, and you can thank Bill Fink for doing that and sorting that out for us. He's a very good man in the way that he helps out lots of different nationalist sites. Rely on Bill for his technical expertise. So if you want to thank anyone for that, then you should be thanking Bill Fink from christoginia.org. And now the podcast should all be back up and running again, and things should be running smoothly. We also have an issue with the radio server. And every so often, you might notice that the radio stream drops, but it should come back again. And again, that is something that is being worked upon. Right, well, I'd like to start today with a news story that covers a trial against Tommy Robinson. And this is particularly interesting because it's the first time, I think, I've ever seen Tommy Robinson covered in the mainstream media in an unbiased fashion. And it concerns a court case that is going on. And the court case refers to the Syrian teenager that was supposedly waterboarded last year or the year before. That was the way that it was portrayed in the mainstream media. Anyway, it was just some water that was thrown over somebody and it was filmed. And Tommy has actually been taken to court by the lad that had the water thrown over him. And obviously, we know Tommy Robinson is not an ethno-nationalist and he's very anti-ethno-nationalist. He's also been accused of misappropriating the funds that people donate to him. But you cannot argue against the fact that he is persecuted by the state. And he does try to speak up for the victims of grooming gangs. And he does speak out against the excesses of Islam. So I wouldn't say Tommy Robinson is an enemy of ours, much as he would like to portray himself as an enemy of ethno-nationalists. I don't think he's an enemy to the British people. I think he tries to help us out. I would actually consider him to be the far right, because it just seems to me that he is more of an extreme conservative than anything else. He's just further to the right of conservatism. That's what I would describe as being far right, is somebody that believes in multiculturalism, believes in liberalism, but he's also anti-Islam or anti-immigration. So they're further to the right than the right, basically, rather than having policies that could be considered to be sort of on the left, which is where ethno-nationalists are, because we put the good of the people before the good of the individual, which means that you do support things such as the NHS, you do support things such as help for the disabled and programs to help people, but programs that are to help people within the extended kinship group rather than programs that help anybody that just turns up on our shores. So I would really say that is the difference between the far right and ethno-nationalism or ethnocentrism, another word that you could call it. Well, getting back to the reporting on this case here, a Syrian teenager suing Tommy Robinson for libel is seeking at least £150,000 in damages, the High Court has heard at the conclusion of the trial. The English Defence League founder, whose real name is Stephen Yaxley Lennon, of course they always have to put that, is being sued by Jamal Hijazi, 17, who was filmed being attacked at his Huddersfield school in October 2018. Shortly after the video went viral in November 2018, Robinson claimed in two Facebook videos that Jamal was not innocent and he violently attacks young English girls in his school. Robinson, who represented himself at the trial, has defended his comments on the basis that they are substantially true. Now again, this is really interesting that he's actually representing himself. He has not got a solicitor there defending him. Now, a lot of the time, people are advised not to do that because they may not know the intricacies of the law. They may not come across with the right etiquette in front of the judge. But when it comes down to free speech cases, I don't think there are that many solicitors that are really good at defending that. When we see people that are involved in prosecution services, when they do defend free speech issues, it is more likely than not that they end up being barred from being a solicitor. I can think of one in particular that spoke up about revisionist history and he ended up being stopped from practicing law. So it may be that these solicitors, they don't actually defend people in the best way that they could because they could end up getting into trouble for that. We see the extremes of that happening in Germany, where if a solicitor actually defends somebody who has been accused of Holocaust denial, then that's it. They themselves will be held up for Holocaust denial for defending the person that's in the dock. Quite clearly, we're not as bad as that here in Britain, but I do think that solicitors and people that are involved in the law courts do shy a little bit away from doing the best in their defence of their clients. So Tommy has decided that he's going to represent himself at this trial. It's a great shame that our trials in Britain are not filmed so that we can watch them, because I bet this would have been really interesting. I bet this would have been riveting for the public that were actually allowed in there to watch this trial. Throughout the trial, Robinson, 38, maintained he was an independent journalist, telling the court the media simply had zero interest in the other side of this story, the uncomfortable truth. Now, they say here he maintained he was an independent journalist. And this really shows this snobbery that there is. Amongst the mainstream media journalists, they think that only they are entitled to call themselves journalists. And I think part of that may be because the National Union of Journalists actually has these guidelines that everybody who signs up as part of the National Union of Journalists have to go along with. And part of that is not interviewing anybody that they decide to call far right. Anybody like Tommy Robinson, whatever he says, has to be challenged. And they're supposed to just no platform anybody that has anything to do with the BNP or anything like that, which basically says that all the people that are signed up to the National Union of Journalists are not going to be providing a balanced view. They're going to be providing a biased view. And I think we can see that here where it says he maintains he was an independent journalist, because he is quite clearly an independent journalist. He does journalism and he essentially does it for himself and for his own website. And he has gone on courses, training courses for journalism. It's just that he's not signed up to this group that all agree that they're going to follow these guidelines, which basically mean promote communism in all their articles. In his closing argument, he continued, "I am far from perfect. However, this case is not about me as much as the claimant's representatives would like to make me and my history or my views a focus of their attention. My political beliefs are not on trial. It is whether my reporting on publicly available information was a matter of truth or not." And we can gather from this that The prosecution in this trial will have been trying to smear Tommy. They will have been trying to say, look, he says this in the past, he says that in the past. He's a hater, so you should be finding him guilty of this. They're probably trying to say that he was trying to incite hate by reporting on what this Jamal allegedly had done to other pupils there. And what Tommy's arguing is that he's just reporting the truth in an unbiased way. The mainstream media just basically attacked this white lad as if he would have had no reason to throw water on this Syrian student. And the white lad and his family had to move because of all the threats that there were against him. It's not like the lad that had water thrown at him was really being threatened in any way. And yet he is claiming that he's been hurt by this news story and he wants £150,000, I believe it was they were saying there. Yes, £150,000 for Tommy's reporting on the other side of the story here. Charlie Matthews, 18, a former student at Almondbury Community School with Jamal, gave evidence as part of Robinson's case, claiming Jamal had hit her in the back with a hockey stick, leaving her with long-term injuries. Addressing the court on Monday, Robinson said, in order for the claimant to win this case, the court has to believe this young girl is a brazen liar. In the Facebook videos, with one seen about 870,000 times, Robinson also claimed that Jamal beat a girl black and blue in a gang and bit a student, which the teenager denies. The trial previously heard evidence from Bailey McLaren, the boy shown pushing Jamal to the ground and pouring water over him in the widely shared video. Mr. McLaren denied being a racist or a bully. Robinson continued, Almondbury Community School has its failings for sure, but racism and racist bullying was not one of them. He added, just because Jamal might have been a victim does not automatically mean that he himself could not be a nasty, foul-mouthed, and often violent young person, particularly against girls and smaller young boys. And this is the point here. This was portrayed as if this was a racist attack, whereas what it was more likely to have been was a disagreement at the school. And I think that's what Tommy was trying to show here. He was trying to show that this Jamal had been bullying others, and this Bailey McLaren was giving him a taste of his own medicine. Just the sort of thing that goes on in schoolyards up and down the country all the time. And yet this was picked upon because they wanted to create a victim narrative about Syrians. And they wanted to portray this as if it was waterboarding, when all it really was just throwing a bit of water over somebody. I mean, the fact that this made national news is a scandal in itself. And to then try and claim that it was somehow racist, it's the same thing that we saw with the Derek Chauvin trial, where they tried to make that all about racism when it was really just an unfortunate happening during an arrest, really just somebody unfortunately dying during arrest. And I guess I should say that Chauvin has been found guilty of murder, of course, so I should really say it was murder, or at least the court found that it was murder. But it really didn't look like he was murdering him to me, and there was no mention of race in that at all. And the same thing here, there shouldn't be any mention of race or religion here, but what the prosecution are trying to say is that Tommy has spoken out against Muslims in the past, so his motive in exposing what really went on here is because he wanted to incite hate against Muslims. And Tommy's argument will be, I was not inciting hate, I was just doing my job as a journalist, trying to provide the other point of view that was not being talked about in the mainstream media. In her own closing statement, Miss Evans argued that Robinson suggested that this is somehow a travesty of justice and that a white schoolboy has been scapegoated. Miss Evans pointed out there was a lack of evidence for Robinson's claims and that Jamal had himself given clear and consistent evidence. Well, hang on a minute. If she's going to say there's no evidence of Robinson, and yet this Jamal's given clear and consistent evidence, well, what about the witnesses that Robinson called? Why is their evidence not considered to be clear and consistent, or at least as clear and consistent as this Jamal's evidence? Miss Evans, the barrister, continued, "We do rely on the defendant's agenda, which we say is an anti-Muslim one, which is why he waded into this. Jamal was the victim of that." She told the court, not only has the defendant sought to try and prove a case that he was never going to be able to do, but he has even, in his closing submissions, continued to exacerbate the hurt and distress the claimant has experienced. She continued, "These are allegations of criminal offences, or tantamount to criminal offences, and it is quite clear that Jamal is the victim here." Well, it was just horseplay on the school playing field. I hardly think it was criminal offences to throw some water over somebody. And again, we can see clearly here that what they're trying to do is they're trying to portray Tommy Robinson's political stance as being the reason for him covering this. And he is likely to be covering this because that's the sort of issues that TR News covers, isn't it? It does cover the problems that are caused by multiculturalism. He does tend to concentrate only on the Islamic problems. And that is something that is of interest to his website's viewers. It's not because he hates Muslims. It's not because he's trying to incite hate against Muslims. It's because he is criticizing the religion of Islam itself. In the same way that Christianity is criticized, that should really be very clear that Tommy doesn't go after Muslims. It's the ideology. And he's always very clear about that. And he is very good at that as well. You have to give him credit. He is very good at his criticism of Islam. He's even published his own version of the Quran, which puts it into chronological order, which gives it a completely different understanding to the one that you will find in the mainstream versions of it. Mr. Justice Nicklin told the court that he will give his judgment at a later date. And addressing Robinson, he added, "I commend you in the way that you have presented the case as a litigant in person. You have done so in a way that has been, to my mind, quite proper, and you have done your best to assist the court." That's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, that is really good. I mean, that shows that Tommy has done really well here, and we have to give him credit for that, to be fulfilling a role that normally it takes years of study to actually do and to actually do well. So that's great, but it is a little bit worrying because, I mean, the judge may be saying that, you know, you've done really well before the court, but I'm still going to find you guilty and award all this money to this Jamal. Or it may be an indicator that when he gives the judgment, he's going to say, well, no, what Tommy Robinson was doing was in the public interest. He was just providing a balanced view of the news story. He was just providing the background to the news story. So we'll have to wait and see. But I really wanted to bring that up just because it was interesting, because it was somebody that was defending themselves. I think the last time I heard of somebody defending themselves was David Irving defending himself against charges of not Holocaust denial. I think it was charges of incitement to hate against Jews. That was quite some time ago. And he ended up losing that, unfortunately. But he was defending himself there, and I think that was the last time that we've seen that. And here is Tommy Robinson defending himself. So best of luck to Tommy in that. We have another case, or rather not really a case, but somebody that was arrested last week, a pastor, John Sherwood, who was arrested on the grounds of Section 5 of the Public Order Act, namely that he had been causing alarm and distress. And this pastor was just out in public, and he was preaching, and he was talking about the first chapter of Genesis, and he was saying that marriage, according to the first chapter of Genesis, which is the word of God, is between a man and a woman. And he was just preaching this in public, and apparently there was a self-described homosexual in the audience that took offense at this. And there was also a self-described lesbian in the audience who took offence at this. And they went and got the police, and they got the police to arrest this pastor, basically for just calmly preaching the word of God. And he was held in custody for, well, I believe it was overnight. And the wording of this saying that he caused alarm and distress. Do people have a right not to hear people preaching the Bible on the street? But surely they can just walk past. If you don't like something that somebody is saying on the street, why is it that they feel that they somehow have a right to take away that man's speech just because they don't like it? I mean, it may be that all the other people that were listening, they did like what he was saying. And all you have to do is walk past. It's the same thing with social media. Why is it that these people think that they have a right to take away other people's speech just because they don't like what they're saying? I will never understand that. Twitter has always had this facility where you can block people if you don't want to hear what they have to say. Why do you have to make it so that nobody else can hear what they have to say? Would these people that do this, would they like it if they had their speech taken away? Would they like it if they had their Twitter accounts taken away because somebody didn't like what it was that they were saying? They would think that was absolutely scandalous if that was to happen to them. But they think that they are quite in the right to do this to other people. And this is before we even get into the fact that Britain is a Christian country. Britain was built upon Christian laws. Our common law is based upon Christian laws. The Queen swore to uphold Christian law. And Christian law is that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that marriage is for the purpose of producing children. And that is the definition. That is the definition of religious marriage. That is the definition of marriage, really. I mean, what we have today, where they say that two men can get married, that's really at the decree of the government. That's a civil marriage, I guess, really, or a politically sanctified marriage rather than a divinely sanctified marriage. It should certainly have some words before it to explain that it is actually different to the biblical marriage, which is based upon biology. The homosexual marriage is not based upon biology. That is based upon two people that just wish to live together and they wish to have the legal benefits that a man and a woman would have when they are married. And I guess you could say, well, that, you know, that's quite reasonable for them to expect to want to have the same benefits if they wish to live together as adults. But to then call it by the same name as the relationship that is between a man and a woman who have got married, who have consummated the marriage, because don't forget the actual word marriage, the marriage act, that is actually an act that can give life to a new child. And the act between two people of the same gender is never going to be able to produce a child. It is not the same thing. I mean, it's a complete redefinition of our language here that has gone on. It's not simply just giving people the same rights as everybody else. It's completely redefining everything. And this pastor should have a right to speak about that. And if people don't want to hear him talking about that, then they can just walk past. People don't have a right not to be offended by what people say. And this was established recently when the police put a big sign up saying that it was an offence to cause offence. And they had to take this sign down because it's not an offence to cause offence. And really, you can only take offence. Somebody can only take offence at something. It's down to the individual if they wish to claim that they feel offended by something. And that is just built into our English language, that you can only take offence. And this goes back to this idea of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Because words really cannot hurt you. And yet today we're telling people that words are the same as violence. And this is very dangerous. Because if people think that words are the same as violence, well, violence requires violence to defend yourself from, doesn't it? And it means that people feel justified in acting out violently against people who are saying things that they don't like the sound of, which is a terrible situation. to be in, where somebody like this pastor could just be innocently preaching the word of God, and somebody could physically attack him and say, well, I physically attacked you because you were coming out with this language, which is hate speech, and words of violence. It's the same as violence to be coming out with this. And it's incredible, isn't it, that we've come to this situation today where the very foundations of our society, the Bible and what it says in it, have now become against the law to even talk about in public. There's a report on what happened here in conservativewoman.co.uk, and this Pastor Sherwood, he says that he had actually been talking to the police up till this point in a very calm and restrained manner, and yet he was accused of causing alarm and distress. How can you cause alarm and distress if you're just talking in a perfectly polite and courteous manner? So the police came up to him, and he says, while this conversation was going on, another officer spoke to me about the need to avoid any homophobic statements. I explained that to uphold God's moral law and to speak about the dangers of sin in respect of LGBT issues implies absolutely no hatred or unpleasantness towards any individual or group of people. Indeed, it is an act of love to one's neighbour. Nevertheless, the Bible's description of homosexuality as sinful is plain and clear-cut. And this should really be plain and clear-cut. Obviously, this pastor's intent is to save anybody who is indulging in homosexual acts from indulging in those acts. We know that if you're homosexual, you're going to have less of a life expectancy, you're going to be more likely to get diseases, you're going to be more likely to suffer from depression, you're not going to be able to produce a family of your own. There are all sorts of downsides to homosexuality, and these pastors that speak up against it, they're not speaking against it because they hate the homosexuals themselves. They're speaking about it because they want a better life for those homosexuals. They want to say, well, look, there is an alternative here. There is an alternative. There is a God here who died to save you from your sins, and he can give you the strength to avoid getting involved in these homosexual acts. They're really trying to help out the homosexuals here. The intent is not to incite hatred against them. The intent is to help these people. And yet he's still been arrested for this. I mean, this is the way that this law is interpreted. It's very strange that somebody like him can clearly show that there's no intent to incite hate there, and yet he can still be arrested. And they're trying to say that he is inciting hate. I think we need to have more of these cases get to Crown Court so that it can really be decided what should take precedence, free speech or people's feelings. And really, it should be free speech that takes precedence, especially when it concerns the Bible. Because don't forget, when you are in court, you swear an oath to tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And that oath is actually sworn on the Bible, because the Bible is supposed to be the whole truth. So if you are not allowed to then preach verses from the Bible, that's essentially saying that God was wrong, and God should not have spoken about these things, and he should not have made these laws. And yet these laws are what our whole society is based upon, and that's why we swear the oath on the Bible in court. So a lot of conflicting ideas here that really need to be hashed out. And until one of these cases actually makes its way to Crown Court, then we won't actually get case law on it, because we have conflicting acts. We have acts of Parliament that say that we have free speech and we can criticise religion. We can be rude about it. We can joke about it. And then we have other acts of Parliament which say that you can't incite hate. And then they interpret this inciting hate as meaning ridiculing or criticizing in some ways. So we have two conflicting acts, and we also have this idea that people say that if they hear anything that they're offended by and they're a minority, then that is somehow against the law as well. So you have all these different parts of law that have been brought in, and none of them have really been thought through carefully. Because the only side that the government have heard about it and the lawmakers have heard about it have come from minority advocacy groups, and they've come from groups like Hope Not Hate, and they haven't actually heard the other side of it. They haven't heard the argument put forward that, well, hang on a minute, this is going to affect people's right to free speech. This is going to affect the very fundamentals of what it means to be a human being. And the way our law is here in Britain, the system that we have, is that it is continually evolving, and it evolves through case law, and that has to happen in the courts. So eventually, one day, it will happen, and hopefully free speech will win. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.